on the floor, and a very fast-moving thing. It was Gus Horowitz, Lou Jones, and myself. Well, my tendency in these situations is to be a bit on the conservative side, not to move too quick. Gus's tendency is to try to grab what you can, and if you see a chance to grab a little extra, to grab it. Lou tends to be sort of in the middle. And it was out of this, if any one of the three of us had been making the decisions alone, we would have made some serious errors. But it was the combination of the three, the strength and the weaknesses, the positive sides and the limitations, that tended to work out in a way that was able to bring us through a couple of extremely difficult situations where I say a wrong decision could have been very costly. Just on a simple procedural motion, it could have blown up the whole goddamn conference, and where, if it had been left to any one of us, the thing could have gone wrong. The whole April 24th experience, our negotiations with the People's Coalition, when that whole arduous, torturous thing was over, we recognized that the team of negotiators that we had there, party people, non-party people, engaged in one of the most complicated maneuvers that I have ever participated in with a gang of the worst crooks that I have ever had the privilege of dealing with. That, again, there was not one single person on that whole team, and we came through it very successfully, that had all of the answers. There was not one of us who at one point or another was not wrong on one or another question. But it was out of the totality of the experience and the capacity to work together as a team that we were able to come through this extremely difficult and complex task in the way that we did. This is what distinguishes Trotskyism, and particularly, if I may say, American Trotskyism from all other political tendencies. This understanding of the relationship, as they say in the dialectical terms of form and content, the interrelationship between political ideas and organizational methods. Okay, I'll stop there. I've gone over the time already. Okay, let me just, you asked the question, I mentioned this early leadership team, and I didn't mention any women. You ask if there are any women among them. There are two, well, it's hard to assess. The fact is, there were very few women in the leadership team in the early days of our movement. Grace Carlson was. There were some comrades in the secondary leadership. It was an expression of the one-sided development of our movement. It was an expression of the whole difference in the social climate of the country, and the expression of the absence of a women's liberation movement. The party today, I think we can say justifiably, is far different than it was 30 years ago, at the time of that fight in 1940, the period I was talking about, and when this initial leadership team was assembled. The party is still far from perfect in this regard. Women still pay many of the penalties within the party that they pay within society generally for their status as an oppressed sector of society. There is far, far less, qualitatively less, conscious prejudice standing in the way of the development of women in leadership positions in our party than there is in society generally. But all of the effects of this society inevitably still does have its effect. But over the years, even before the women's liberation movement, our party did make progress on this question, did develop consciousness and understanding. Our consciousness of the question did not begin with the rise of the women's liberation movement. There was a whole educational process carried on within the movement Comrade Evelyn Reed made what, in my opinion, was an indispensable contribution with a whole series of internal party educationals over the year that laid the basis for our present works on the question of women's liberation, and which helped to educate the party so that when the women's liberation movement did develop, we were able to relate to it in a much more meaningful way than we would have if we had begun to simply start to think out the question at that time. And apart from that, over the years, just as in society changes in material conditions change the status and the opportunity of women, so it did in the party. For example, during the period of the Second World War, the notion of women's places at home and in the kitchen was changed because women were needed in the war industries and opportunities opened for them. In a certain sense, you can say that was true in the party. In the period of the Second World War, when the party leadership, a good section of it was in prison, another section of it was drafted into the army, another section of it was out in the maritime industry to avoid being in the army and to participate in trade union work, opportunities and openings developed for women to begin to participate in leadership positions to a greater extent than previously. For the first time to any serious extent, women began to function as branch organizers rather than as secretaries and social directors, and began to play more of a leading role. I think it's in the past period, again, even prior to the development of the women's liberation movement as such, but since, in my own view, the development of the YSA and the confidence of the women who came into the movement with the YSA, which again reflects a change in consciousness in society, that women have played a greater role than ever previously, certainly in the national leadership of the YSA, that was the case. I believe a majority of the national secretaries of the YSA, or at least half of them, have been women. And that role that women have played in the YSA has reflected itself as well in the party. I repeat that I would certainly not argue that the process is anywhere near completed and that there are not defects and flaws, shortcomings, lack of consciousness on the question, and so on. But to use an obscene phrase, I think we can say we have come a long way from where we were. I don't mean the women, I mean the party. Further questions? Pardon? Sure.
I have a few announcements before we go into the question period. On Tuesday night, the class, which is the fourth talk that, by that time it will be the fifth, talk that Harry is giving, will be given at 160 Kroger Hall. That was where the class was held on Friday night. It is not going to be held here. So put that in your little notebooks. Now, that class will finish the series on the history of American Trotskyism, and there will be a break in the summer school schedule until July 9th. Then, on the weekend, July 9th to 11th, we will begin on the following topics. Well, in that weekend, the following topics will be covered. Roots of the current radicalization, black liberation, Cuba, and the history and development of the Young Socialist Alliance. The classes that begin on July 9th are going to be held in San Francisco, not here. This, the Tuesday class that is going to be here will be the last one that we have in Berkeley. And finally, keep in mind that you can buy your summer school books for 25% off, either at Grandma Bookstore, 2509 Telegraph, or usually there'll be a table out here in front of the class meeting. Okay, it's now 10 to 3. We have a little bit of time for discussion. I think we
have to be out by 4.
No, we have to be out by 5. I think we can sort of play it by ear. If there's a lot of discussion, we should just go ahead.
Yeah, I have one other announcement. And that's that there's going to be a picnic next Saturday at Ridgewood Regional Park starting around 11. For all day, so there's going to be all kinds of food, baseball, etc. There's swimming.
Okay. Then as soon as the discussion is over, we'll have a 15-minute break, and I repeat 15 minutes, so whenever we get to that point, I'll tell you what time it is. Okay,
yeah. I wonder if before we go into the question periods, I looked at my watch and suddenly realized I had gone over my time, and I stopped before I had actually completed my presentation, and I omitted a very important question, which I'd like to deal with just briefly, and that is the whole question of the proletarian orientation which developed out of the 1940 fight. If you've read In Defense of Marxism and the Struggle for a Proletarian Party, you'll know that one of the political and organizational decisions that was agreed upon as a result of that fight was the need to proletarianize the party. It was Trotsky's analysis, and the leadership of the SWP agreed with him, the majority of the leadership, that the reason that this crisis had erupted in the party in 1940 and this petty bourgeois opposition had been developed was because the party at that time had, in particular in New York and a few other centers, so little connection with and relation to the mass movement of the working class, and that it was necessary to carry on a conscious political campaign to proletarianize the party. And a major drive was made. People who had middle-class occupations were, each one of their situations was reviewed. Where it was possible at all, they were asked to change their occupation to get jobs as workers in industry, to become active in the trade union movement, and to change the whole social composition of the party in that way. This process was facilitated by the oncoming of the Second World War and the development of the war industries. When the thing was first projected, it was rather idle, since there weren't any jobs around anyway. But with the development of the war, not only did people have a job to get an opportunity in war industries, but many of them had a personal stake in doing so because it offered an occupational deferment from being drafted into the army. So the party was quite successful in changing the social composition by taking many people with middle-class lives and occupations and getting them into the labor movement. And this was considered a basic aspect of coping with the problem that had developed in 1940. However, as we will see when we discuss the 1953 fight with Cochrane, that even this by itself, that is establishing a proletarian composition in the party, or a decisive or mainly proletarian composition, that it's in itself even is by no means a sufficient guarantee against the penetration of petty bourgeois and conservative political influence within the party and the development of political crisis within the party and significant revisionist opposition to the party's program. However, it was an essential feature in the history and the development of our party, helped to give it some extremely significant roots among the working class, and did play an extremely positive role in the development of our movement. Okay, questions, discussion? Yes.
You mentioned the mass movement of the 40s. Were there other mass